Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, that's 12 to 3 Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Welcome in. Hope you're having a great day. We got awesome topics for you. Let me hand out the Twitter handle for you. That Twitter handle is at Gottlieb Show. Oh, God, that's easy. I can get that one. At Gottlieb Show. Writing that one down right now. In case you want to tweet at your boy. I got so much stuff here. Let me give you a little rundown. Adam Dedeau is going to join us, quarterback expert, quarterback guru. We're gonna talk to him about Cam Newton. The part about Cam Newton no one's talking about in regards to his success in New England. We'll talk about that with Adam Dedeau. I'll talk about that in 1 hour. Daniel Jeremiah will be our guest. Ross Dillinger will join us, college football insider for Sports Illustrated. Will we have a season? Will we have a season? Let's start with the news of the day. You heard it from the great Dan Beyer that UConn will not have a football season. And so, of course, you react to that. And my sarcastic reaction was, UConn still has football? Oh, yeah, UConn still has football. And only Dan Orlovsky is mad. Nonetheless, UConn football actually did play in a BCS bowl game, right? That was actually their last time they were truly relevant. Randy Etzel, who's now the coach, was the coach. They got stomped by Oklahoma in the Fiesta Bowl. Then he caught a plane to Maryland, took the Maryland job, and the program has fallen off substantially. A good portion of that is because of conference expansion, and unlike Syracuse, UConn was left behind. Now, I do understand that this is a bad sign for the sport. That however bad UConn football is, and UConn football is not good, it hasn't been good in a while. However bad UConn football is, it was not very long ago a reputable program. I'll grant it, okay? They've won 9 games the last 4 years combined. Yikes. 9 games the last 4 years combined. And even that year in which they went to the Fiesta Bowl, they only won 8 games. It was like a 3-way tie for the Big East. They go to the Fiesta Bowl and they get eviscerated, right? That did in fact happen. Go and look at the final scores, like, 48-20, and it wasn't really that close. And it wasn't a great Oklahoma team. But regardless of how good they've been, and they've been bad, you know, this is a program that went from being a 1AA to being a Division I, to playing in 4 consecutive bowl games before they fell off. And now they're not going to have a season. Have you ever heard of such a thing? Granted, it's the pandemic, but context matters in everything. Right? Context matters in everything. Is it a big thing? Yes. Is it a bad sign? Yes. But let's put some context behind it. Is everybody else going to follow suit? No. Not right now. They weren't part of the big boys. They were in the American Athletic Conference. They were leaving the AAC to become an independent because the rest of their sports were suffering because of the massive cost to travel to fly to Houston, to Tampa, to East Carolina, to New Orleans for Tulane, to Wichita for Wichita State. That league's you have to fly everywhere. It's as opposed to the Big East or being an independent where you can compete against all the schools that are local with your Olympic sports. Right? And so in the grand scheme of things, it's a big story. But in the micro, for UConn, they kind of bailed on football and thought about completely bailing on football when they left for the Big East in basketball anyway. And when you're an independent and you can't get the games, what's the point? So you pack it in, you save the money for a year, you hope the players stick around, and you look towards next year and you try to completely rebuild. I don't know. UConn football being a disaster is not anything new. And they're saving money and saving face by just going like, COVID. Which is what many failing businesses have done. And this only speeds what I've told you about the pandemic, what I've told you about COVID is most of these businesses which are struggling, it's not because of COVID. It's COVID has sped it up. It's microwaved these things. Newspaper industry, microwaved them. Right? Microwaved them. Look at all the different industries which are, you know, the fitness industry obviously has really, really struggled in terms of those small individual gyms because you can't get in there. But many of we'd become bloated with the bar method and yoga lattes and everything. Every little mom and pop gym. Malls are going under. Well, malls are going under anyway. All of these things were going to occur. And UConn football, there were thoughts of getting rid of UConn football for the past 5 years. These are not new thoughts. It's really, really expensive to have a football team. Can it be really profitable? Absolutely. Absolutely. The upside is almost limitless in terms of the finances and what it does to your school. But the pay to get into that discussion is remarkably expensive, not just for your coaching staff, for your facilities, the upkeep of the facilities. And then now you have the doctors and all the medical people that have to take care of the players and make sure they don't test positive for COVID and put them in a semi-bubble. Does this mean that college football is going to go away this year? No. Look, it was almost over for UConn football anyway. It doesn't mean it'll be completely over, but it's closer to over than it is to being back. Now, for everyone else, it's a sign of the financial times. If you have Wisconsin football, it's talking about losing $100 million. You know, there's lots of people that ask, why can't those schools dip into those endowments to bail out the sports programs? Well, because the universities themselves, if a football program is going to lose $100 million, what do you think a university is going to lose when kids aren't on campus? Right? Like it's like you don't even know how this thing works. There's a reason college costs more than it's ever cost before, because everything's more expensive. You got the debt service on the buildings. You got the maintenance on the buildings. You have all these old historic buildings either have to be redone or there's a ton of upkeep. And you make your money not just on tuition, but on books, room, board. All those things make a little bit of money, which you pull it together and you have 50, 60,000 people on campus. Oh, and you're supplying jobs to everybody who lives there. Like, this is a big thing. And then we get to the, is UConn doing this because it's not safe for the players? And my argument has always been, and it's a sensible one, which is everybody believes that when you're inside the facility, you're safer than you've ever been. It's just some kind of bubble. Look what the NBA has done, where third straight time the NBA said no positive test of the 343 players tested on its campus, dating to when the league announced the initial batch of tests in the bubble July 13th. No positive tests. Ain't no positive tests. So the bubble does work. And truthfully, a college football bubble where everybody else is not on campus and they're all taking classes online, only college football players are on campus, that would be the safest actual place. The problem is that you got to open it up to regular students. And if you open it up to regular students, well, now it's on the college football players to not intermingle with those students, not just during school hours, but off of school hours. But here's the point. If you don't have college football, do you really think that all your college football players are not going to mingle with people their own age when they're at home or even when they're on campus? Of course they will. The only difference is the liability. No one wants somebody getting deathly ill or God forbid, dying or losing lung capacity on their watch. The likelihood is so minute, but it's strong enough to where, unless you have waivers, and even the waivers don't really hold up in court, unless you have waivers, it's almost impossible to form a team. And so you also heard about this Big Ten coalition, which is supposedly thousands of Big Ten players, although most there's no names to it. And then at the end, they said it was also Division III and Division II and NAIA. My guess is there's a handful of guys. There's some graduates that are leaders. And they had guys, are you in? Yeah, oh yeah, I'm in. If you were really worried about retribution, what you should do is put your name on it. And that way you would know that there's the players would know there couldn't be retribution towards that particular player. But UConn announces they have no college football this season. On many levels, this is really just a UConn story. UConn football has been an abject disaster. It has been a money pit for the university, for the state, and this really buys them a year where they can stop and think, do we really want to be committed to being an independent? Because it's almost impossible to be. How impossible is it to be an independent? Notre Dame essentially joined the ACC for a year.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
There is this thing that we do where we assume, hey, Tom Brady's skills had kind of started to erode, right? And he wasn't surrounded by great talent. But you put Cam Newton, who's a former MVP, in, and, you know, Bill Belichick's always run to run the football with your quarterback or have a mobile quarterback. You're going to win the AFC East. You might go to a Super Bowl again. Granted, Baltimore is a prohibitive favorite. Kansas City is a favorite. But outside of those two teams, who else in the AFC really gives you pause? Now, that was before the Patriots saw the most opt-outs of any team in the NFL, specifically around their defense, and Dante Hightower, who makes $8 million a year. Like, they're going to be hurting a little bit. But I thought this was interesting. Kyle Love is a former teammate of Cam Newton, also played for the Patriots, said this to the Boston Herald. This is just my opinion, but I don't feel like Cam can take the pressure of coaches talking down about his play. If he had a bad game in Carolina, the coaching staff wouldn't say much to him because they may have felt he could be a little frail about it and maybe pout. They never really corrected to the point Bill used to correct Tom. Bill's going to be Bill. He's going to let Cam know how he feels no matter what. Everybody's treated equal. And actually, I love that about Bill because that let the whole team know you're going to be held accountable. Bingo! Look, I have some things that hold me back about Cam Newton. New offense that he hasn't learned in person until now. He hasn't been healthy over the past 2 years. He's had two shoulder surgeries and tried to rework how he throws the football. I don't care how it looks on YouTube. How it looks in person to actual quarterbacks, to quarterback coaches and offensive coordinators, that's interesting. He's never been crazy accurate. And as athletic as he is, he's not as athletic as he used to be because he took so many hits and he's had surgeries. But all of that pales in comparison to the Patriot way. Everybody thinks the Patriot way is just about not paying guys top dollar. That's not the Patriot way. The Patriot way is we're going to coach you. And we're going to coach everybody hard. That's what we're going to do. And if you think they'll take it easier on a guy who hasn't done it than a guy who won 6 Super Bowls, got to be kidding me. And you tell me a time in which Cam Newton was coached hard. You know, yeah, he had a laptop deal at Florida, which ultimately led to him leaving. But he didn't like Florida because, and it wasn't like Urban Meyer's a huge stickler for a lot of the little things, but Tim Tebow was ahead of him. He didn't like some of the things that he was being taught. Then he went to Blinn. And he had junior college. I mean, can you imagine Cam Newton at Blinn Junior College? Like one of the greatest athletes we've ever seen to play the position in a junior college. Of course, he was unbelievable. You think they were coaching him hard? At Auburn, you think they were coaching him hard? Like, no. And if this is the case in Carolina where he didn't really take well to criticism, he wasn't coached that hard. Now he's going to the place in the NFL where they coach you like a college kid. They coach everybody the same. They get on to you. Oh, this has backfire written all over it, doesn't it? Does to me. You know, I look at it and I think to myself, this will not work out. This will not work out. Because And it's not like they're committed to him. You know, it's not like he can go tell them to F themselves. They got to pay him $20 million. Like, if they don't want to play him, they can cut him or they can keep him. And by the way, now they have tons of cap space. Tons. Because they've had all these guys opt out. Dante Hightower opt out. That's $8 million in cap space. Thank you very much. You know, they settled those two claims. Then they get this, like, dude, the Patriots can be nice in a year. So I don't. You know, this is one of those everybody in my profession, and my bosses can tell you this. Everyone says they want feedback. Hey, man, give me some feedback on that segment. And then all of a sudden you get some negative feedback, and you would be amazed at how quickly guys get defensive. Well, you know, the sound wasn't played on time by Ramos. Well, you know, the guest wasn't there when he was supposed to. Well, you know, we thought about talking about this rant, but I was kind of tight on time prepping for the show, so we just kind of winged it. Well, you know, my voice was bad that day. Well, the guest was like, those are all just, instead of like, you know what, you're right, I got to be better. I got to be better. And going about the process of being better. But it's really hard to hear somebody, especially like Cam now is 30 years old. He's been in the league for almost a decade. He's gone to Super Bowl, he's won an MVP, and now some guys are going to be like, everything you're doing is wrong. Like, what? What are you talking about? And especially when you've been told before, everything you're doing is right. That can be, it's the old dog, new tricks, really hard to be a guy who's super coachable when you haven't, and this is not his fault. Some of it I'm sure is, but you're just naturally coachable or naturally not coachable. But if you haven't been coachable, you haven't been coached your whole career, it's kind of hard for somebody to ask you to be coached, isn't it? Right? It's hard for somebody to go like, hey, I know you haven't been coached your entire life, but now is the moment at 30 years old with a team that desperately needs some sort of juice. Now is that moment where you'll be coached. That just doesn't happen that way. You know, it's the same thing with playing style. You know, it's really the thing I'm most interested in regards to Tom Brady and how he plays in Tampa. He's played one way with one sort of verbiage his entire career. Now, all of a sudden, at this point in time, you're going to ask him to play a different way? He's a whole different language? Well, good luck with that one. That does not sound like a plan that's really, really going to work. Not at all. So I could be wrong here, but I just think that the real challenge to Cam Newton is going to be, how does he take criticism, and does it eat him up, or does he use it to be motivated? You know, does he use it to be motivated?
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Daniel Jeremiah joins us. DJ, of course, you hear the Move the Sticks podcast. You hear him cover all the football for the NFL Network. And if you listen to radio locally in Los Angeles, you can hear him cover the LA Chargers. Russell Wilson's unlimited video. I mean, you know, it does feel like there's this element of dork to him. And yet he's tried so hard to concoct an interview, an image where he's cooler than you think he is. What's your reaction when he has this weird viral video from earlier today?
Well, first of all, I think it's from a couple years ago, right? Because I'm pretty sure I'd seen it before. I think it just kind of made the rounds again today. But I think you think pretty well there, Doug. He's just kind of deep at heart. He's kind of a dork, which is kind of funny because I think when you think of some of the top quarterbacks over the last few years, I think that's a trait you wouldn't think they might have in common. But, you know, I think Andrew Luck would definitely qualify.
This is true. Yeah, Andrew Luck would qualify as a dork, but and they embrace their dork. He does this thing where he tries to tell you, like, look, I'm married to Ciara, and she's cool, I'm cool, and then you're like, well, yeah, but he's not. It's like, I always feel like guys are way more accepting of you when you just are who you are instead of trying to fake who you are.
Yeah, I mean, there's two things I'll say about Russ, though, is his preparation is pretty legendary in terms of the work he puts in with his, you know, with his body as well as what he does with the film, and then the guy delivers. So you know how it is, Doug. When you when you're around team environment, the guys that work hard and perform when it matters, they don't really care about anything else.
You've been in front offices before, Eagles and Ravens. I'm just wondering your perspective on Antonio Brown to the Seahawks, to the Ravens. Would you bite if you were one of those two teams?
I wouldn't. I mean, I think you might have a short-term impact with, long-term problem. I just haven't had a front-row seat and seen what happened. You know, we all saw it. I mean, from Hard Knocks and seeing what you deal with the Raiders dealt with, why would you ever sign up for that?
I don't know. I guess because if you're the Seahawks, you went all in to get Jamal Adams. You know, he's 3,000 miles away from trouble in Miami. You know, you get him on a minimum deal, and he is super talented, and it's like his last stop. That would be how I might talk myself into it.
Yeah, I mean, and then we haven't even got into the other whole host of issues where, as an organization, you have to have kind of some, you know, you always talk about having certain standards in other areas off the field. You know, this is not a situation where it was a performance-enhancing drugs or if it was some other thing you kind of push to the side and forgive and move on. I think some of the issues that he's had as an organization, I think personally, if I was in the chair, I don't think I could bring him in. I just couldn't do it.
Yeah, no, I get it. It's, at some point, there is a limit to what you're willing to extend yourself to, right? Every owner has a point which is like, yeah, I can't do it. I'm good mm-hmm. here. Daniel Jeremiah joining us, Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. All right, you talk to people in the league. Do they think we're going to have a season?
I do. I think we were making it to the starting point, and that was my whole concern, was can we get to the starting point? If we get to the starting point, I feel comfortable we're going to be able to kind of figure it out. And I think we're headed towards that. And talking to teams, look, it's not an individual bubble per se, but, man, they are taking every precaution. And it sounds like the players, at least at this point in time, are taking this very seriously. And, I think that everybody gets caught up in the numbers for when these guys came in. Who cares about the numbers when they came in? Let's worry about the positive test once they're in this controlled environment, and so far, so good. I mean, it's not baseball, right? You're going to play one game a week. You're not going to be traveling as much. There's no preseason. I mean, I think it's going to happen.
I think it'll happen as well. How do they protect themselves with guys going, you know, what they do during the week?
Yeah, I mean, look, that's the big concern. But I just know that teams with messaging, it's been pretty impactful and pretty powerful when you have your own peers, your own players, your own teammates telling you how serious this is, how important this is. And I think they're kind of embracing some of that brotherhood. And I think baseball, I mean, look, let's be honest, football is fortunate. They didn't have to go first. The NBA is different. They're in a bubble. But when you look at Major League Baseball and you see – one or two guys go outside of the protocols, and it can have a big time impact on their season. So, not to mention the bigger impact. So, I think that happening already. I think that lesson being learned. Hopefully, the NFL players are able to learn a little something from that one.
Daniel Jeremiah, our guest, Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. DJ, let's get to the opt outs. Kansas City loses an offensive lineman. They lose Damian Williams, who might have been the MVP of the Super Bowl. Everybody's talked about the Patriots, but how damaging to Kansas City season are their opt-outs thus far?
Well, I think the running back position will be fine. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is going to be able to plug in and give him a lot of production there, especially in the passing game. Damian Williams is a really good player, but I think they're fine there. Duvernay-Tardif is one of the better guards in the NFL. I don't think people realize how good he is, and that is something that I think that's an issue. And I think when you look, as we always talk about with great quarterbacks, being firm in the middle, that is a big piece. And now when you kind of look at their collection of offensive linemen, Mitchell Schwartz is one of the best, if not the best, right tackles in the NFL. But there's a lot of leakage everywhere else. That would concern me. And you're right. Nobody really talks about them. I talk about all the guys the Patriots lost. Obviously, C.J. Mosley is a high-profile player for the Jets. But I think that Duvernay-Tardif is a great story and is a great human being, and it's admirable what he's doing 100%. But that is a big loss for their team.
Yeah, I think it's a massive, massive loss. Derek Carr said kind of what we all think, right? He's got to show that he belongs. He wants respect. Nobody watches them more intently than you do, not just because of the Charger games, but also your breakdown of quarterbacks. Will it work with Derek Carr with the Raiders?
Yeah, I think it can work. I think you need everything else to go well on the other side of the ball. You know, the way they're running the ball, they've kind of built their team to play to his strengths, which is a little bit more, you know, conservative in nature and just being accurate. Don't turn the football over. Be a physical team. I think that kind of works for him. The thing with Derek is he's just got to get to the point where when it's time to make those three or four throws in big games against great opponents, you know, can he be a little bit more aggressive and attack a little bit more? That, to me, is kind of the next step for him. Now, there's a lot of people that don't know that he'll ever get to that next step. But I think they've put pieces in place offensively now. It'll be a pretty good group for him to have. I think this is going to be the year. I really do. I think this is the year we learn whether or not he's the guy going forward or not. And I think if they were to struggle, they like Marcus Mariota a lot. So, you know, this is going to be a big year for him.
Yeah, it is going to be a huge, huge year for him. Okay, let's bounce around a little bit. You know, I think it's interesting, this Cam Newton stuff. One of his former teammates who also played in New England came out and said, like, hey, you know, he wasn't really coached that hard in Carolina. When he had a bad game, they wouldn't get on him. Now he's going to be in New England. And Bill's going to be Bill. How do you think Cam Newton handles that?
Well, I think that the important thing you need to remember is that Bill has a resume and hardware that they didn't have in Carolina. So, and you see great players in terms of taking tough coaching. Some guys embrace it, some guys don't. I do think when you look at somebody that coaches hard, who has all the rings and all the success and is widely regarded as the best whoever held the position, I think players tend to be a little more accepting of that criticism. So, you know, maybe coaching him hard in Carolina wouldn't have worked. You got to do what you got to do. I think Bill Belichick, it's a whole different ballgame. I actually think he'll respond to that better than people think.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a big unknown for me, right? Because everybody says, I want to be coached. I want to be pushed. Push me, coach, right? And then you do, and you're like, whoa, hold on. You know, if you personalize that stuff, if you take it and internalize it, it can be a real, you're not used to it. It doesn't always end up with the best results.
But don't you think this is different in that Belichick with his accomplishments? And on top of that, you're going to have teammates who've been in the building who'd be like, Cam, you should have seen when Brady was here. He got it even worse than you're getting it right now. Like, this is pretty good company to have. You're not getting singled out here, pal.
I get it. It sounds really good. I just know that there's lots of guys when you're 30 years old and you haven't, no one's come at you like that.
Yeah.
You know?
It'll be interesting to see how it goes. I think if he does respond well to it, it could be the best thing that ever happened to him.
Garoppolo says he's unfazed by the Brady thing. He's completely unfazed by the rumor mill that, you know, he's, what it says, when all this was going on, you hear about it, things like that. I wasn't really too worried. I'm always confident in my play. Are they confident in him? That's the big thing, because players do feel that, and only throwing the ball 8 times in the NFC Championship game and, you know, trying to sit on the ball at the end of the first half in the Super Bowl doesn't exude confidence. Where do you think the Niners are in truth with Jimmy Garoppolo?
I think TBD. It wouldn't shock me if he did not take the next step, if they were in the quarterback market the following year. You know, I think this is, again, I feel like we're saying this about a lot of these guys, but this is kind of the make or break year for Jimmy Garoppolo. As well as he played, you could see it in the postseason, the lack of faith and the lack of trust there. And this team is ready to win right now. So I don't see them as a team, when you have a head coach with security and a general manager with security, if things aren't going, according to plan, they can afford to go in a different direction. So, no, I don't. I think there's TBD. I think you've gave them truth serum there in San Francisco. They're optimistic, but I don't know that confident, you know, ultra confident would be the phrase I would use.
How do you think the Vikings handle Dalvin Cook wanting a big contract?
I mean, I just think with patience, you know, with patience. He's at least somebody that can impact in the passing game, and that makes it a lot more understandable, but we said the same things about all the other big running backs when they got paid, that, you know, Le'Veon Bell and Todd Gurley, David Johnson, all these guys are impactful in the passing game as well. So to me, I just think you have a number, you stick to it, and you be patient. And you don't want to find yourself on that list of shelling out the contract that's going to look terrible in a couple years.
We both love Phillip Rivers. Okay, as a dude, no better guy, right? And to talk with him, he makes everybody feel like you're his best friend. And he's had a great career. He was not good last year. Now, some of it is not his fault. Some of it was his fault. He came out and said that, you know, that making the decision to opt out would have been making the decision to retire, right? It feels like this is, you know, he's got a year, and maybe if it's like the perfect year, maybe two. My question to you is, how much does he legitimately have? I know that the dome will help him for arm strength, but and it's a good offensive line on paper. How much does he legit have left in the tank?
Well, can I get back to you in like November? Because I was talking about this with a guy who used to be a general manager, and we were having this conversation. And he said, you know, with the older quarterbacks, you know, it's one thing how you feel in the first half of the season, but those hits and that physicality, your body just does not respond to it as well anymore. So I think you're going to see Rivers come out and play really well early in the season. To me, how much he has left in the tank, let's get to November and see if he can maintain it. If he can maintain it through the year, then I think, you got another year on top of that. But to me, that is where you're going to learn about Phillip Rivers. You're not going to learn about him in September. You're not going to learn about him in early October. I'm telling you, Phillip Rivers will come out. He'll be on fire early in the season. It's, can he stay fresh? Can he stay healthy? And can he continue that pace throughout the season?
Daniel Jeremiah, DJ, who's getting ready for the NFL season. He, like me, thinks we'll have one. And we'll see if everything goes according to plan. Thanks so much for joining us. Hope you're well, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, gotta eat these grilled nuggets. Appreciate you, Doug.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Ross Dellinger joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show, college football insider for Sports Illustrated. As of today, it's August 5th. How confident are you that we will have the season start when they're now proposing it'll start?
Certainly not as confident as I was probably June 5th, but it seems like every day, Doug, we have a list of, or the hurdle just gets higher. You know, the obstacles get more and more. If we were on a racetrack, there's higher hurdles and more of them, it seems like, every day. Whether that's the rising cases in certain places, the outbreaks on campuses, the fear that administrators have in the return of students to campus, colleges shutting down because of cases on the team. It's kind of one thing after another. You know, players now bowing out, you know, opting out. Some high profile players have already opted out, and I'm sure that's just the first of the dominoes. So I am not super confident that we can start as early as some teams want to, which is August 29th, I think, is the kind of the week zero in college football. I think what the SEC did in the Pac-12, putting the date at September 26th, gives you more time, certainly, so I'm a little more confident in that date. But my overall confidence in completing a season is less than 50%, just the way we're going right now.
I guess the first thing is, like, you have this mix. Some schools don't have kids back on campus. Some SEC kids are reporting to campus already. They're modifying the classes. I guess the challenge is really, one, the testing, quarantining kids, and then keeping them from going to these parties while they're there, right? I mean, isn't that really the challenge?
That is, the latter one is the biggest challenge of all. We saw today Louisville announced that four athletic teams, all activities have been stopped for those teams because there's an outbreak, which was, surprise, surprise, traced back to a house party. in we're going to have that in college. We reported a couple months ago, LSU down in Baton Rouge had a big outbreak that was traced to a night out at a local nightclub in Baton Rouge. Kansas State, I think, shut down workouts for a little while because of a house party. So these are issues. They're not going to disappear during the season. Kids aren't just going to all of a sudden disappear or not want to go out to the bar or not want to go hang out with their friends. So we're going to have these issues persist. And this is the big difference, Doug, between pro sports and college is in pro, you can have a bubble, as we're seeing successfully with the NBA and MLS. In college, you cannot. The players are younger, not going to make as prudent of decisions. Number two, you have all these other students on campuses, or at least getting there later this month, and you're going to potentially have spikes because of that. These student athletes are going to be going there, going to be going to classes with other students, and they're not paid, you know, so you can't really sequester them like you could a pro athlete. So the college
you
sports
absolutely,
a lot more issues.
Ross, you absolutely can. Teams go to training camps. Teams have you basically have athletic dorms, which I know they've kind of eliminated. It's got to be 50% students or whatever, but they find a way to have basically an athlete wing, or they live off campus. They live all together. You absolutely can, you know, quarantine them. Doesn't mean isolate them, but quarantine them. And you absolutely can ask guys to not go out. You can. It happens all the time. Like in California schools or Colorado schools, like, you can't smoke weed even if the rest of the school can, even if it's legal in the state. You can't burn NCAA, but you can absolutely ask guys to do something that regular students aren't asked to do because they get the privilege of playing college football.
I probably should rephrase. You certainly can do – you can. You can put them in a bubble, but will they? You know, yes. Will college athletes do that? And they won't. They won't. I mean, they already have come out and said they're not going to do that because – part of it is because of all this athlete compensation NIL stuff going on in Congress. They don't want in any way to seem like athletes are different from students, even though we know they are. They don't want it to seem like that. They don't want it to seem like they're employees. So they're not going to do it. And about the thing about the bar, I mean, Doug, come on. You know, we all went to college. You can ask a college kid not to do something, but guess what he's going to do purposely probably the next day? Do it, you know? So that's the issue there.
Yeah, I'm just going to disagree with you in that many of the things that it takes to be a great athlete, it takes personal discipline, right? And personal accountability. Yeah. That's one of the things you like learn in college is, you know, if you get a scholarship check, like, all right, well, I got to make this work for the month till I got my next one. Happens when you get money from home, you know, I got to learn how to manage this until I get the next amount of money from my parents. And I do think you can ask them, especially because in terms of bars, there's just a limit to the number of kids that can actually go to a bar. I understand guys have fake IDs. I don't know. I'm intrigued to see how this thing plays out. You know, like we saw the spike early for Clemson. They haven't reported positive tests since. Same thing for Oklahoma. Their first test was like 19 that tested positive, none since. And they seem to be all going headlong into it. Let's start with the Big Ten thing. What do you take of the new Players Tribune article, which it says it's thousands of Big Ten athletes, although I'm curious why no one put their name on it, and then they included NAIA D2. Like, I actually think you protect yourself more if you put your name on it. That way you know that nobody can cut your scholarship or, you know what I mean? I'm surprised there's no names on it.
And you remember the Pac-12 did something similar, Pac-12 players, and there were only 11 players on that put their name to the Pac-12 deal. When they sent the letter to Larry Scott on Sunday, it was just 11 of them. And from what I understand, no team in the Pac-12 has more than three players who say they're kind of part of the movement, who say that they will boycott if these demands aren't met. Now, there are a lot of players out there that are, for the movement, support their teammates, support the movement, but they're not going to opt out. Some of them have already come out and publicly said it. As far as the Big Ten, you're right. There's not any names there, you question that. However, the Big Ten's letter is much more reasonable. You know, their list of demands is just around the COVID-19 precautions and things like that. The Pac-12 demands were for 50% of athletic departments' revenue, basically, which is just never going to happen. I think we know it's never going to happen. You know, they wanted some coaches to take a cut in salary, and I think the commissioner as well. So the Big Ten's list of demands, they're a little more reasonable. They make a lot more sense, and I think they're going to get a lot of them. You know, I think a vast majority, if not all of them, will be met, and a lot of them are already in the process, you know, the process of being met by the Big Ten in their protocols and such.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. What's crazy about it is it does feel like it was setting up to be a great year in college football, right? Like you had these two quarterbacks at Ohio, you know, one at Ohio State and one at Clemson, and they seem to be on a crash course. And you think maybe Texas is back this year. Obviously, Oklahoma's going to have a new look. And it's like fascinating that kind of selfishly, as guys that love and cover the sport, we're waiting and we have no idea what this thing will look like. And of all the sports that is affected by home field, the pomp and circumstance and the pageantry of campus football is incredible. It's going to be interesting to see what this looks like if there's no fans in the stands, even if they have games.
It is. I mean, think about just through all of sports, you know, what sports have the biggest home field advantage. And I think it's college basketball, number one. I think it's college football, probably number two. You know, you like you said, you think of the environment and everything that goes into a game day on a college campus. And it is a huge advantage. It's going to be odd when we turn on our TV and a 100,000-seat stadium has 15,000 people in it. Because if you talk to architects of venues and then you talk to doctors and you talk to administrators, you cannot socially distance a stadium and have more than one-third of it full. It's basically impossible when you talk to them. So a lot of administrators are coming out hoping for 50%, you know, of their stadium full. That just seems like a stretch. And so I think we're going to see 20 to 30% at most stadiums. And it will be very odd. Be very odd in the press box too, Doug. You know, I don't expect full press boxes. We're going to be up there, and it's probably going to be a third or a quarter full.
Ross Dellinger joining us. Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. UConn cancels their season. A lot of it comes down to, look, they're an independent. It's hard to find games. Is there a chance UConn football doesn't come back at the Division I level?
Oh yeah, I think there's. I think there definitely is a chance in that. I think it's been well documented some of the issues that you know, financially that UConn has. I mean, a lot of these smaller D1 programs, these Group of Five programs, they don't make money. Their athletic department doesn't make money. Football program doesn't necessarily make money. And right now in the financial situation that they're all staring at with this pandemic, it would make a lot of sense for a few of them to fold it up. So I'm not sure that's going to happen there, but I would not be shocked if you know, that does happen. And they maybe even use the pandemic as a way to usher out a sport. We've seen that, Doug, we've seen that around the nation. This summer, a lot of sports have been cut. I think it's up to 50 or 55 Division I sport teams have been cut. And a lot of administrators are using the pandemic to do that, you know, to save money and cut an Olympic sport that loses $500,000 a year.
And then you have Alabama, who's giving out new contracts today.
Yeah, no, the biggest difference, right?
Don't care.
Yeah, the gap between the gap between the Power Five in everybody else in Division I is growing and growing, and that's a good example of it.
Yeah, it's a great example of it, right? But you know, my take on some of this is, hey, some of this was coming anyway, right? Like it's a lot like JCPenney going under during the pandemic. It's like JCPenney was going under anyway. There was already a massive division between the haves and the have-nots and the possibility of the Power Five breaking away, and this is only going to speed up that process. It's not something that's only happened because of the pandemic.
Sure. It put it on the fast track. You know, the pandemic, it exposed it and it put it on the fast track. And I know it's you hear this every offseason, the talk of the split between the Power Five and the NCAA. It's like this talking point. It seems like every offseason. And this year, it just feels like we're closer and closer and closer to it happening, because we're seeing now the pandemic has shined a light on how big of a gap there is, not just between an SEC team, say, in some group of five team, but heck, I mean, in an SEC team and in a you know, smaller Pac-12 team or something, or I mean, the gap is really wide between several levels, and it's a cliche, but it's true. It is a broken model. I mean, the whole NCAA structure is a broken model, and we're going to see in years from now that it is going to be changing fairly quickly.
Okay, so what does it change and look like?
Well, I think eventually you see the Power Five do their own thing. They're already down the road on it, right? They already have the Autonomy Five rules that they operate by that are different than others. I mean, the Autonomy Five presidents and chancellors, they meet separately from everybody else a lot of times, especially during this pandemic that's happened. So certainly they separate off, and you could see them do their own thing, have their own championship. Group of five teams maybe have their own championship. Everybody has its own division, and things are a little more maybe competitive. You know, it's kind of absurd to look and see that in Alabama, with a budget of $130 million, is playing an FCS team with a budget of $8 million. Like, why are we doing that? And now the pandemic is showing that we shouldn't be probably doing that.
Yeah, we probably shouldn't be, although it does help fund the lower level athletic department, and then it fills the coffers of all of Tuscaloosa, where they fill up the bars and the restaurants and allows them to play all those other guys. Going to be an interesting year. We'll see if it gets started. We'll see if it gets completed. In the meantime, can't wait to read and listen to your work. Ross, thanks so much for joining us on Fox Sports Radio.
Sure, Doug.
Ross Dellinger, College Football Insider, Sports Illustrated, joining us.